information readily available to you. And so in order to make sure that this matter kept in the forefront, because of the legislature's responsibility to fund the courts, that this was a good idea to have this responsibility placed on the state court administrator to advise the legislature of where Oregon judges were ranking and where that resulted. So that's the background of this. I would like to say there are two things in the record. One is a letter from, for your record, one is a letter from Albert Menasche, president of the Oregon State Bar, which I would encourage you to take a look at. The second thing, as I'd like to draw your attention to, is the task force report on judicial excellence called Judicial Compensation in Oregon, the Need for Reform, a report of the Task Force for Judicial Excellence. And if you'll look on the inside cover, you'll see that the endorsers and sponsors of this report. This report was undertaken by an independent group of business lawyers and business leaders. It's a comprehensive study. It indicates to it explains what would happen if our salaries had kept up with inflation, where our salaries should be. It does a cost of living analysis. It gives you a comparison. And it basically is the fundamental document that supports the things I'm about to say to you. One is that judicial salaries are not commensurate with the problem-solving and leadership roles that judges play in our communities every day. Number two, judges find themselves, as I indicated, ranked, judges in Oregon ranked 49th or 50th as we speak today, and soon to be 51st by July 1st. Innumerable other state employees are compensated at rates much greater than judges. The public lawyers who appear in front of judges are paid at compensation rates that exceed judges. This is a matter of governmental crisis, in my view. And so this bill, we're urging you, is one way, as I explained earlier, to keep the legislature informed of where judicial compensation ranks and how that should compare to other other states that we find ourselves in. And so this is a comprehensive bill that would supplement what I see as a three-pronged approach to this, and I'll end with this. I think there are three prongs to this. One is Representative Butler's bill, House Bill 2417, which makes sure that we are always informed so that everyone in the legislature knows where judicial salaries rank. Number two, we have a bill, of course, that we're supporting, which is a salary bill that would provide a short-term solution to this governmental crisis. And the third approach is we need a public officials compensation commission so that we have a neutral, objective way of setting compensation for public officials and, of course, for our self-interest with judges that reflects a market-driven and rational approach so that we can continue to attract lawyers from the private sector to judicial service. If we lose the ability to attract good lawyers from the private bar, we will have a judiciary that's much different than we have traditionally had throughout our history and that has made our judiciary strong. And I want to make sure you know these words that I'm saying to you now are not original with me. They come from Chief Justice Roberts, United States Supreme Court, who devoted the whole of his state court report, his U.S. Supreme Court, state of the court report to judicial salaries in the federal system, which of course are greater than our own. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here to support this bill. I think it's very important, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Yeah. Ms. Anderson, Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Justice DeMunez, did I pronounce that right?
Of course. Okay.
Thank you.
Means you have you're good in Spanish.
you spoke to a couple times to the idea that there's a crisis in our judicial system, and that this is a part of it. are we not filling judgeships now? I mean, are people not applying, or I mean, are there vacancies, or are we speaking to the quality of people, or can you expound on that?
Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, thank you. That's a very good question, and I think I can illustrate in three different perspectives. Dan Harris, who's a circuit judge in Medford, was appointed to the circuit bench 10 years ago. And at the time that he applied for appointment to the circuit bench, there were 24 applicants for one position. All of those applicants had more than 15 years' experience as lawyers. 10 years later, in Josephine County, just up the road from Medford where Judge Harris sits, last year or the year before, there were two judicial vacancies at the same time. There were four applicants for those two positions. One lawyer was completely unknown to anyone in the county. They didn't know that that person practiced law in Josephine County. Another person had 2 years of experience and wanted to be a circuit court judge. So our recruitment, it's the bell that doesn't ring. My position here is you should never want to become a judge to get a pay raise. Our system has traditionally, both in the federal system and the state system, relied on those good lawyers who have made comfortable livings in private practice and then were drawn to public service and who were willing to make a financial sacrifice. But when those financial sacrifices were made, there was a reasonable relationship between what lawyers, good lawyers, made in private practice and what your salary would be on the bench. That gap has become too wide now. I may have one other answer for you. So what I've described to you is a recruitment piece. There's also a piece on the other end, people retiring. Judges are now retiring at much younger ages than they used to. Historically, judges were at their best in their 60s. 60 through 66, 67, they had all that experience. They had seen it all, done it all, 15 years experience under their belt. And those are the judges that could try those complex commercial cases. Those are the judges who could help the parties to settle these complex cases. We're now seeing these judges leaving at age 60. And the reason is purely financial, because they can move now to the private sector, engage in arbitration and mediation, and it's what's economically reasonable for their families. So that's how we're seeing that. Thank you.
Representative Gerard.
Thank you, Chair Riley. Chief Justice DeMunis. The question I have is, when was the last salary increase? I was here in 93, and I think in 93 we actually did raise your salaries. So, there was a crisis then. Is that the last salary increase?
No, there was a salary increase that was final in 2002.
2002.
Yes, but there's been, judges have not been eligible for any cost of living. So there's been no salary raise since 2002.
Well, just a comment for the committee. I think it's important that they keep pace with at least the people in neighboring states. So I think it's important to have good judges on the bench.
In our salary initiative, Chair Riley and Representative Girard is simply asking to be average, and that would be the average of the four surrounding states.
I just want to comment, I was drawn to the high salary position of being a state legislator.
I can see that.
Yes, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chief Justice. And I apologize, I was late and did not hear the first part of your testimony. So if you've covered this question, then I'll just talk to the committee about it later. But my question is, why? Why has there been no adjustment? What do you think are the reasons for that?
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher, thank you for your question. I will have to say that I will qualify my comments, if you will. First of all, this is my second year as Chief Justice, and I'm very humbled and by the opportunity to be Chief Justice. I'm learning a lot. But I did not have a great deal of contact with the legislature during my other years as an appellate judge. I was very happy to write my opinions, supervise my law clerk and my judicial assistant, and hope for the best. I have some observations about that, and I'd like to illustrate it, if I might, this way. A judge in Pendleton makes $36,000 a year less than a judge in Walla Walla. And the reason for that is that the state of Washington has had a public officials compensation commission for over 15 years. Their commission has held hearings each, I don't recall exactly how often they meet. But their Public Officials Compensation Commission has been active for 15 years, and they then do a market rational analysis of what public official compensation should be. It's referred to the legislature, and if the legislature doesn't agree with that, it gets referred out to the people for a vote. That's never happened because those salaries have been set objectively by a neutral group. That's not been the case in Oregon. And there have been reasons that I will leave to those of you who have history in this building who may tell you why some of those things have happened. That's about the best I can do, Representative Thatcher.
Thank you. I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
Did you mention, and I'm kind of busy taking notes, but I didn't remember you saying if most other states have a commission such as Washington has, the Public Employee Compensation Commission?
Chair Riley, Representative Thatcher, I think that there are 20 states that have commissions that operate in different capacities. Some of them make advisory recommendations. Some of them operate in a manner similar to the Washington model that I described. And I think 15 of those states operate something like the Washington model, where there is extensive workup by the commission, referral to the legislature, and then there's either no action or some affirmative action by the legislature that then creates the salary.
Thank you.
Representative Gerard? Thank you, Chair Ronnie. The funding mechanism for your salaries, I know that it comes from various sources. Could you elaborate on that a little bit, or is it just you have no clue?
I'm probably going to say the wrong thing, Chair Riley, Representative Gerard. I'll refer. We have staff people, but I think it's general fund dollars.
General fund dollars. Staff is nodding.
Okay, then I didn't make it. Okay.
I see the reason for your problem.
We don't have private financing.
Any other questions?
Well, I did, but I hated to waste time if you'd already talked about it.
Representative Byer, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is there a policy option package that would actually raise salaries this session?
Chair Riley, Representative Byer, thank you for that question. Yes, there is. It's in our budget, and the governor's recommended budget includes the amounts necessary to fully fund our budget request for our salaries.
Thank you.
Question. Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Chair Riley. The section of the bill, section 1, sub 2, I guess it's on line 11, 12, and 13, specifically says that the report should include a computation of the average compensation paid in other states to judges with responsibilities that are closest equivalent, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. As I look through it, that's the only thing that I'm seeing right here quickly that
is absolutely mandated by the report. Is the vision that that's all the report would be? Because it seems to me that I don't know how much I care about how much judges in Nebraska are making if they're the best. The best comparison. I mean, I'm also interested in how many people are applying for positions that are open and stuff like that. So,
Chair Riley, Representative Edwards, I may have not be able to answer your question fully because I don't know everything that was in Representative Butler's mind when he sponsored this bill. I do know that what he intended by this was that there would be a comprehensive analysis and that the report would indicate what is the average compensation for judges performing equivalent responsibilities throughout the country, even more expansive than our analysis, which was we'll look at the 13 western states, because I fully concede we don't necessarily need to look at New York or, you know, Texas, but his idea was more expansive, that there would actually be a national average that you could figure out, and that we ought to be, Oregon ought to reclaim its place as a progressive leadership state with judicial salaries, and so we would never fall below average. I believe that's what he had in mind. But I qualify those remarks. You need to ask him.
So Representative Butler feels that we should reclaim our spot as average?
Apparently so.
I'll have to speak to Representative Butler about that.
We're asking only to be average.
Any other questions? Thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate you being here.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, thank you very much for having me here today. It's a pleasure to appear in front of you.
Thank you. There's no one else on the list to speak to this. Is there anybody in the audience who would care to testify on this? In that case, seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2417, and I'm going to call about a 5 to 10 minute recess. Work session on House Bill 2417. Is there any discussion about this bill?
I might be able to provide a little bit of additional information.
Please.
Your staff measure summary indicates that the measure may have fiscal impact, but the statement is not being issued. I do have an update for that. It will have a minimal fiscal impact.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House Bill 2417 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Beyer has moved that we pass House Bill 2417 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Any discussion? I'm going to have a roll call vote. Could you do that, please?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes, aye.
Aye.
Votes aye. House Bill 2417 passed at the committee and will be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Mr. Chair, I move that it be placed on the consent agenda.
Representative Girard has moved that this be placed on the consent agenda. Any discussion? Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would recommend anytime we start talking about anything to do with any sort of salaries, I think it would be more fair if all the members got to hear some of the discussion about it. So,
any further discussion? I'm going to call for a roll call.
I should clarify if it's the committee's desire to have a roll call vote on the motion to place the measure on the consent calendar. It would be the only thing that's under discussion. A member voting no on this motion would not be voting no on the bill. It's
correct.
Simply voting no on a
on the consent. The bill is already passed.
Yes.
We're voting on whether it goes on the consent agenda. Would you call a roll, please?
No.
No.
Aye.
No.
Chair votes no, and so that failed. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2417.
Chair, we still need a carrier for that bill.
Okay. Do I have a volunteer?
Fred wants it. Chair, I'll carry it.
This will be carried by Representative Byer. Thank you, Representative. Okay. I'm going to open a public hearing. I'm sorry, a work session, not a public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2066. Give us a summary on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, House Bill 2066, we had a public hearing on this bill on February 1st. This is the bill that creates the sister state committee and consolidates existing state committees, sister state committees within that committee. At that time, we had testimony from Representatives Lim and Richardson, and Representative Lim indicated he would be introducing an amendment at Representative Richardson's request, which would grandfather out the Fujian Sister State Committee. The dash one amendments, which are attached to the staff measure summary for this bill, do just that. They are effectively identical to the bill, with the addition of a section establishing within statute the Fujian Sister State Committee. Previously, that was not established by name in statute, but because the measure grandfathers in that, it would maintain that, it would establish that in statute. The Fujian Sister State Committee, as per the Dash 1 amendments, would include the current membership, which means that the Senate President and the Speaker of the House would remain as co-chairs of the Fujian Sister State Committee. And, one other thing, I'm sorry. The Legislative Fiscal Office has indicated that the House Bill 2066 with the Dash 1 amendments will have a minimal fiscal impact, and as a result, they are recommending that the subsequent approval of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Is there anybody here who would like to speak to this bill? Is there any discussion on the committee? Yes.
Mr. Chair, do we have the authority to rescind?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Representative Gerard?
I was okay until the last little sentence, but the ability to rescind the referral to Ways and Means, what's that predicated on?
If I may.
Yes.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, this, the referral to the Committee on Ways and Means was put in place by the Speaker's office. And as such, the House operations require a committee wishing to rescind a subsequent referral to receive prior authorization from the Speaker's office in writing. So a letter was submitted at the Chair's request to the Speaker's office, and they have signed and given permission for the committee to rescind the subsequent referral.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the House Bill H2066-1 amendments.
Representative Gerard moves to adopt the House Bill 2066-1 amendments. Is there any discussion?
A question about the amendments.
Yes.
The amendments are only to Section 4, or the addition of Section 4? I just wanted to confirm that.
Mr. Chair, members, I believe there has been a reordering in this because Section 4 then... of the Section 3 of the original bill has been moved to Section 4, and there was rewriting of it of the original bill necessary, but functionally the only change to the bill is the grandfathering out of the Fujian Sister State Committee. That there is additional language in there, but only insofar as it makes necessary to make that change.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative.
I don't have a problem with the amendments. I just wanted to double check because I haven't had a chance to read this line by line. I got this and it looked like there were a lot of changes, so I wanted to make sure that this doesn't have
that everything was as was presented previously to the committee. So.
Okay. Further discussion. Is there objection? Not. The amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2066 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Representative Girard has moved House Bill 2066 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation, and that the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
You betcha. Aye.
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 Aye. I'm just going to do it.
You can just, yeah.
Okay. Representative Rod, you want to carry this?
Oh. Mr. Chair, I have something to add.
Okay. Well, all right. With the motion passes and the bill sent to the floor, of course, I'm actually going to assign Representative Lim as a carrier to this.
I was going to suggest.
Thank you. Get out of here with it. Yeah, I should have known. Yeah.
Oh, I should have.
Okay.
I didn't correspond with him.
Okay. With that, we've concluded all the business for today, and I'm going to close the House Committee on Government Accountability and Information Technology for Thursday, February 15th, 2007.